met his kids a month back, and since we're going to have two presentations from the department, we will start with the
other one whilst we are waiting on Ambassador Machila. I see Mr. Moodley, am I correct? And can you introduce your team? And you welcome.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I think Chairperson, the team that's with me is our acting DDG Human Resources, Mr. Tengiwe, the Chief Director for Property Management, Property and Facility Management, Ms. Bernice Africa, and I am the DDG for Corporate Services and the CFO, Sogan Moodley. Chairperson, we apologize for being late. We were coming from the Select Committee now. We were there help us plan, and it's taking a bit longer than we anticipated, so we really apologize for that to the Honorable Members. And we will do the presentation as requested by the Committee on the Performance, the Financial Performance of the Department for the last quarter for 2010-11. That is the presentation that we will do to the Committee Chairperson with your permission.
Okay, thank you. We had got your apology and we had accordingly accepted it. We will now hand over to you to lead us in the presentation. Members, we will be dealing with that second presentation, and then the MDGs we will deal with when Ambassador Machila is here. Over to you, DDG Moodley.
Thank you, Chairperson. Colleagues, honorable members, as you will know that we are currently, just to give you overall background, is that we are currently finalizing the financial statements for the 2010-11 financial year. And honorable members will know that the financial statements must be tabled, submitted with to the Auditor General on or before the 31st of May, and also a copy to the National Treasury. So as we speak right now, the department is busily working with the financial statements. The information that I'm going to be present now will change slightly in the next 2 or 3 days as we finalize our final preparations for handing over the financial statements to the Auditor General and to National Treasury. From an overview in terms of the department overall, our budget for the 2010-11 financial year, after the adjustments in September last year, after the adjustment estimate of national expenditure, the appropriation came to 4.715818 billion. The actual expenditure, as we had recorded as of yesterday, honorable members will recall that previously we mentioned that a lot of our money is expended at missions abroad. We have 125 missions in foreign countries. So there is a little bit of a time lag for the mission accounts coming from the missions abroad to us at Pretoria. So what we normally do is that at the end of the financial year, we give ourselves a little bit of time to process all those mission accounts and to make adjustments where necessary. So as we speak right now, all the mission accounts have been processed, but there are one or two financial transactions that we are still investigating. So as it stands right now, as of yesterday, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, the expenditure is 4.395 billion rands, which represents at the moment a spending of 93.2% of our appropriate amount. We will speak about the amount that was not spent as we go per program. With regard to program one, which is administration, which really speaks to the minister, the deputy ministers, the director general, and on corporate services, human resources, and the training academy, the total budget for the year was 1.279 billion. We spent 1.057 billion, and the actual spending is recorded as we stand at 83%. The reasons for not spending the entire amount of money is related mainly, very, really, to the underspending on our capital projects. You'll find that there are four noticeable projects. Washington, where we are renovating our chancery. Honorable members will recall that we had made a presentation in March this year to the House, and we had noted that in Washington we owned the chancery and the official residence that were attached. They are situated next to each other and they were attached. However, during the course of the last few years, we found that the accommodation levels in the chancery was not adequate, not sufficient for all of our transfer officials there, and we had to hire another building to accommodate some of the other departments, especially the Department of Home Affairs. And of course, it's costing us quite a bit of money in rental. This building was bought by the South African government in 1940, and since then there's been no major renovations or improvements to the building. So we are engaged in a very comprehensive project to renovate the entire building, the chancery and the official residence, to bring them as together as one and make a single chancery for the entire South African component, so we don't have to take another building in another place. Members, we had also reported last year that we had bought a official residence for the ambassador in Washington, and the ambassador has moved, so that's why it's easier for us now to deal with the chancery. What had happened is that we had planned to progress significantly on the Washington project, and we had planned for the municipal requirements. However, when we had started with the engagement with the local authorities, we found that the level of interaction that the local authorities required was far, far more than was explained to us. In fact, they wanted public participation in the project, and public participation included things like the color of the paint, the type of curtains that we were using, which really took us by surprise. It was not mentioned to us, we had not anticipated, and it delayed the entire project, so that for the renovation project in Washington, the amount of about 52 million rand that we're going to expend has to be stood over for the next financial year. We've, of course, explained this to National Treasury, and they are in the process of assessing our requests through to them. With regard to Abuja, the South African House in London, honorable members, we had also reported earlier that we are undertaking an extensive project in the South African House on Trafalgar Square, really related to the refurbishment of the lifts in South African House. We also had planned to do a lot of work in this kind of financial year. However, when the contractors had then did an assessment after the planning was done, what had not come out in the initial review was that there was asbestos that's contained inside of the building, within the building structure itself. It's not visible to the naked eye. Now, asbestos is regarded as a dangerous substance in the United Kingdom, and we were then requested by the local authority to work out a plan on how we're going to deal with the asbestos first before we do any renovations, and this has put the project back by quite a few months. So we are currently dealing with the asbestos matter, and then we will continue with the renovation of the lift. So that has also put us back a bit in terms of the spending of money earmarked for the South Africa House in London. Abuja, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, my apologies. In Abuja, we are constructing a chancery and official residence. Now, we were able to engage with the contractors. We had experienced over the years very slow construction from the contractors, the RCC Nigeria. The environment in Nigeria does not allow for fast tracking of construction. We had to import quite a bit of materials, and the contractor was quite slow in meeting some of the deliverables and targets. We were, however, able to engage with him in June last year and put into place some measures whereby the official residence was then completed, and our ambassador in Abuja then moved, or the High Commissioner in Abuja then moved into the official residence in October last year. We have then also agreed with the contractor that the chancery would become available at least by the end of November, and then our mission would move into the new chancery. But this has not happened. There's been a significant slowdown by the contractor in preparing the chancery, and of course there's been some related claims that come through from the contractor, so that the place is not fully completed as yet. So we do envisage that in the next month or so, within the next month, we will engage with the contractor at the highest level, at the CEO level, and we'll be able to finalize the matter for the chancery to move into the new premises. However, that has had an impact on our payments for the chancery in the 2010-11 financial year, and it will move on to the 2011-12 financial year, and of course we've also addressed National Treasury. All of these, honorable members and honorable chairperson, was really out of our control. We did we did everything that we could to keep this within our control, but as you could see, some of these matters were outside asbestos, the requirements for public participation in Washington, really out of our control, and we have engaged with National Treasury with regard to that. Of course, the last one, which we haven't put in the board as yet, is our refurbishment of our official residence in Tokyo, but that is in the planning stage. There was an amount of money that we had kept aside for that, and because of the recent developments in that country, we had to then move a little bit backwards in terms, pull the plan a bit in terms of Tokyo. With regard to international relations, our second program, which is where our line function and diplomatic work is being done and paid from, honorable members will find that we had final appropriation of 2.3 billion rands. We've spent all of that money. 100% of the money has been spent. And just to say that for the current financial year, as we stand right now, we had to move about 11 million rands into this program to accommodate some of the expenditure. So we are fully spent on the international relations. That means our the spending at our diplomatic missions abroad and the related management of the diplomatic missions at headquarters here in Pretoria. With regard to the program 3, which is state protocol and public diplomacy, we had finally allocated an amount of 222 million rand to this program. The spending as of 31 March is 204 million rand, which essentially means that about 18 million rand has not been spent. The spending rate is at 92%. The reason for the underspending, Chairperson and Honourable Members, is that during the course of 2010-11 financial year, in accordance with the request from Parliament previously and by the approval of the Minister and the related necessary approval from DPSA, this unit, which was previously headed by a Chief Director, had been upgraded to be headed by a DDG, been upgraded to a branch. So essentially it meant that the head of the unit had moved from a Chief Director to a DDG. There was an additional Chief Director post created, and then of course the additional management structures within that branch for intergovernmental coordination and so forth, which was created and funded by the warm bodies, were not filled in with effect from the beginning of the financial year. Of course, we funded the entire structure, but the appointments had taken place somewhat later in the year. For instance, our current DDG joined the department around January 2011. So for a major part of the year, this structure was there, funded and vacant, but was not filled. And therefore, it represented a bit of some amount of savings and spending on this structure for the public diplomacy unit. With regard to state protocol, Chairperson and Honourable Members, you will recall that Ambassador Makubera, who was our previous Chief of State Protocol, was appointed as Director General for the Department of Tourism. And when he had vacated the post, Ms. Losi was then acting as our Chief of State Protocol. So as we stand right now, we have not filled the head of the post as yet. It's been advertised. It will be advertised shortly, but Mr. Msengi can speak up. It has been advertised, yes. It's been advertised, and then, of course, the processes will follow. But that also led to a bit of money not being utilized because the entire structure for the Chief of State Protocol was then not spent on. So that is the reason for the underspending on Program 3, which is Public Diplomacy and State Protocol. On Program 4, Chairperson, Honorable Members, this really relates to our membership to international bodies such as the United Nations, the African Union, our contributions to NEPAD, the APRM, and so forth. Here, what had happened was there was an amount of 401 million rand that was appropriated for the African Renaissance Fund. This amount was paid to the African Renaissance Fund. The underspending of 73 million that you can see here arises from two reasons. Largely because when we had prepared our budget and the adjusted budget in September 2010, we worked on the basis of a foreign exchange rate that existed in September. However, when the payments were made in January, normally we get our assessment from the United Nations, from the African Union, and so forth, around the last quarter of the year, January, February, and March. We made the payments from January, subsequent to January 2011. The foreign exchange rate had strengthened quite considerably in favor of South Africa, whereas we were seeing a rate of about 7 rands to the dollar previously. In January, we were paying around 6.80 to the dollar. And if you look at the budget there of 300, 400 million rand, it's a significant difference in the foreign exchange rates. So there, about a significant amount of non-payment took place because of the savings that we had realized on the strengthening of the rand against the other major currencies. The second reason, honorable members, is that we budget for the membership fees in the foreign currency at the beginning of the financial year. We only received the assessment in January. When we do receive the assessment is not necessarily exactly the same as we had budgeted. You'd find for that for the United Nations and the African Union membership fees, the assessment came in a bit lower than we had budgeted. So that led to a bit of underspending as well. With regard to this program, Honorable Chairperson and members, the department does not have any leeway or any authority to utilize the monies or do anything with it. We pay all our contributions and our transfers, all of it has been paid. The balance of this program goes back to National Treasury if there is a foreign exchange gain. So that is really the status quo of the finances as we stand right now in terms of the performance for the last quarter. Just to say that we have not recorded any unauthorized expenditure. We have not overspent our votes as yet for the financial year, and that the any underspending is attributable largely to circumstances that we have no control over, unavoidable and certainly even unforeseen. But where we have expenditure that was within our control, honorable members, you could see that the expenditure was fully effected during the year. Thank you.
Thank you, DDG. Honorable members, that is the state of affairs in as far as the finances and the in the department are concerned from January to March 2011. And I think you have heard the presentation, and maybe you have areas where you want some further clarity. I noted Honorable Mubu, Honorable Jacobus, for now. Thank you, in that order.
Thank you, Chair. DDG, I just wanted to find out from you, how does the department monitor the expenditure of our contributions to the African Union, for example, and SADC? Because, for example, at the African Union, there have been reports of that have been noted of mismanagement of funds, not necessarily for African contribution, but how does the department monitor this, that this money is used properly and that we are satisfied with the way our contribution is made, considering that South Africa contributes one of the biggest chunks of monies to the African Union, probably even to SADC. So how do you monitor this? Thank you.
Honorable Honorable Kozana?
No, I just wanted to thank Madam Chair.
To ride on that one?
Yes.
Okay.
So that we shouldn't be moving all over the place. I just wanted to know whether these contributions are standard amounts or are they budget proposals.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Jacobus?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a general question. I'm not sure if the presenter can actually give us figures, but in terms of the delays on SA House in London and Abuja Chancery, what are the financial implications for those delays? Also, the I think it's London asbestos. Do we have an estimated amount of what the delays would cost us? And so on. Also, just SA London, SA House in London. That's a very old building, and it's a historical building, I know that. But if we're going to be refurbishing and whatever, hoisting equipment and lifts and all of that, over the long term, won't it be more costly to do that? I'm not sure if we've purchased the building or if we've purchased the building. Okay. Then it's our baby, that one. But I was just thinking, because if you have to refurbish, because it's a very, very old building, I know it, the cost would be there. Then the last question, Chairperson. Okay, no, I think that was it. The financial implication of all the refurbishments and so on, even in terms of Washington, that we have to delay because of all sorts of other things, because building materials and things have escalated, and if we can get some general figure about what that means financially for us.
Honorable Mokgalapa.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just two quick questions. The first one is on the administration side. We have been raising a concern as a committee of the lack of capacity the unfilled vacancies, and I see you've got a shortfall here in terms of your expenditure. Is it linked to this incapacity, and how can you explain thereof? And the second one is the issue of the ARF. Are we still contributing to this fund, even if it's in a process of being winded up and replaced by SATPA?
Thank you. Honorable Suleiman.
Honorable Chair, thank you. Program 2, International Relations. That amount really confused me. Is there a mistake somewhere there? Program 2 there. But talk about billions, and I do not understand what's going on there.
Okay, it looks like members are all fine. Should I hand over to the DDG to respond? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members. Honorable Mabu, with regard to the contribution to the AU and SADC, this is calculated in terms of our contributions as per a percentage that is worked out in terms of the membership contributions. With regard to the monitoring, Honorable Member, we have a unit within the Department, the Africa Multilateral Branch, that has specific desks directed within the branch that actually works with SADC, the AU, and the APRM and NEPAD that monitors the work, engages, and participates. Of course, mismanagement of funds within the AU and the and SADC itself will be dealt with by the SADC Secretariat and the AU Secretariat. But our department will keep a careful and close watch on that. We will, of course, get further information from the Africa branch and make that available. Honorable Jacobus, the delays in South Africa House, London, and Abuja, the financial implications, I will just ask Ms. Africa to, when I'm finished, to deal with that. But the Abuja matter is standing at about 16 million rand. The London is at the moment about 3 million rand. We own the building in London. We don't own the land. The land belongs to the Crown. We had entered into a 100-year lease agreement, which comes to an end in 2020. We had the hopes, or we had plans in 2010-11 to engage with the Crown to extend the lease for another 100 years on certain terms and conditions. But the municipality took a very long time, and we've lost some of that opportunity that was there. But we will continue engaging with the Crown to try and keep a long-term lease, because we really own a very, very big property there. That property was refurbished. There were renovations and so forth done in the building itself. But the lift was one of the matters that we have not given attention to in the past, and that is one of the reasons why we are attending to this lift. But we do own the buildings, and therefore it is our responsibility to maintain and to keep those buildings in good order. Honorable Skosana, I just wanted to say that in terms of the contributions, as I mentioned, it is in terms of percentages that are worked out as per the GDPs and so forth of the countries, and it is worked out at the AU and SADC level. With regard to the lack of admin capacity, I will ask Mr. Sengiwe to deal with that. Are we still contributing to the ARF? Yes, indeed, Honorable Mokalafa, we are indeed contributing to the ARF. The idea is that when the ARF closes down or is repealed, the entire amount, the assets and liabilities of the ARF, that means the commitments that were made by the ARF and the monies available, the assets available, will be transferred to the SATPA, so there won't be any losses as far as that's concerned. Honorable Suleiman, the amount is 2.3 billion rands. 2,300 million rands is the budget, and we've spent 2.3 billion rands on that program. Thank you. I'll just ask Ms. Africa to speak quickly about the South Africa House and the Abuja matter, and then Mrs. Sengiwe just to speak on the vacancies. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. On the issue of South Africa House, like Mr. Modi was saying, it's the refurbishment of a lift. So the lift carriages were bought in the previous financial year. So the only thing that will be extra on that project is when we then discovered the asbestos. There was asbestos work that had to be done, so we got experts in. They had to decide, are we going to remove the asbestos, and with what are we going to remove it? So that added about 100,000 rand to the value of the project.
In both Abuja and Washington, there is delays or construction-related delays. So you are correct, ma'am, that in the next financial year, your material, the plant and material that you are purchasing in the next financial year may cost you more, but it may also cost you a little bit less. In the construction contract, you usually have what is called a contract adjustment factor that allows for us to pay the actual price of material, but it does not change the price that the contractor is charging, what is called the B's and G's, these professional charges, and it also does not change what the consultants are charging. So we will probably, in the next financial year, we will now do a readjustment of what is then the ultimate value of the project based on the work that is to be done next year. Mr. Moodley has said the value of work still, that we need to roll over for Washington is $52 million, and in Abuja is $12 million. On South Africa House, as Mr. Moodley was again saying, is correct that we own the property, and then our general principle is that if properties are rented or leased, then we do not do any major renovations, then we will hand it back and rather move into another property. South Africa House is big investment made. The property was built in 1930s already, so there is quite a bit of work to be done, and we pay from that from our capital budget. Thank you very much.
Just a question of clarity.
Okay.
When you talk about the 100,000 and is it, you're talking about rand or pounds? Is it rand? No.
It's rand. Sorry, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. In response to the question raised around capacity, indeed, we had capacity challenges with regard to our public diplomacy work, and that is why the department decided to elevate that program into a branch. It is now a fully fledged branch with the Deputy Director General. We recently appointed the Deputy Director General and have advertised the two chief director posts and the six director posts. Only last week, but one, 2 weeks ago, we interviewed for the six director posts. We waited for the DDG to be appointed first so that he or she could facilitate the appointment of his management team. With regard to other areas within the department, our focus has been on the key management positions. As you know, the DG post was recently vacated, and you could say that in that regard we keep on chasing a moving target. But that post was advertised. We had interviews last week. We hope that the process will be finalized very soon. And all the other high-level posts, including the Chief of State Protocol, have now been advertised, and we are in the process of concluding the selection processes. Thank you.
Honorable Mubu, you wanted to come up again?
Yes, Chair, thank you so much. Yes, I noticed that there was no mention in the presentation about the Pan-African Parliament. I don't know whether this is a project funded separately by Public Works, or is it a responsibility of DIRCO. If that's the case, what is the situation as it pertains at the moment? Because the last time we heard about PAP was that construction had been temporarily halted due to some reasons. But I want to know, when will it resume, and is there going to be any escalation in terms of cost as a result of this stoppage? Thank you.
Honorable Skosana.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, just a general question, Ray. On this international diplomacy, the diplomatic education program, I'm not sure whether, I just want to know whether you find that there is value for money that we spend. Because recently I've just listened to Mr. Ban Ki-moon when we were campaigning for elections, and he was wishing us good local government elections. But then he put a rider on there to say that it would be good if South Africans during elections also they educate their people about what is happening globally. So I thought he was sending a message somehow. Whether are we making really good impact here, or is there value for money? Do we see any results? And because this is the most difficult area of educating South Africans about what it, because with South Africans, this is not the priority as far as they are concerned. It's not really a bread and butter issue. But it is when it comes to these international agreements or trade agreements and so, which are impacting on our own people. Do you find that what you spend here really brings us some value?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Just a follow-up on the issue of capacity. The post that you're referring to, is it middle management or lower management? Because when we engaged with the DG on the strategic report, he said the problem was at low management level and further down, because at senior level they are covered. So the post that you are referring to, is it middle management or lower management level, and what is happening further down? Because we are yet to receive a report on what is happening further lower down.
Thank you, Honorable September.
Okay, thank you. Just looking at the entire report, and this being a quarterly report, the question then, Chair, is how much of all of this are spilling over into the new budget year? Because if all of these things spill over into the new budget year, it means you're carrying it from the other financial year also. And that obviously, you know, it will now be a recurring one, budget after budget. And when you then, at the end of the year, look at the adjustment budget stuff, you will find that, yeah, they're getting money for old stuff instead of new stuff. So, Chair, if that can just be explained, how that has been factored in, and also, you know, how and what advice Treasury is giving in this regard. And in particular, when it comes to capital expenditure, there are always problems with capital expenditure. By the way, I just want to know, why is it in your budget and it's not in Public Works' budget? If you can explain that one also. Thank you, Chair.
And the last input will be from Honorable Velma.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. In addition to capacity, one of the reports of the DG, there was over 400 vacancies that need to be filled. I just need clarity. The union that has been established, will they then facilitate and fast-track those appointments, and then also the quota filled on South African side in international institutions. What is our department's plan in filling those quotas? And then will they then advertise? I know we are focused on creation of employment and job creation, but how can the people on the ground know that they can apply for these positions? Yes, are they also then responsible, the union, for then filling those positions? Thank you.
Thank you. I think that's about it. And then, DDG, it's up to you now to wrap up, respond and wrap up. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will answer the question on the Pan-African Parliament construction. I will give you a very quick answer on diplomatic education, but that I will refer back to DDG Moniela and DDG Modlomo for a fuller answer, because it falls under their areas of work. With regard to the capacity and which level, both the questions from Honorable Kalaba and Honorable Velma will ask Ms. Sengiwe to deal with it. With regard to the spills into the budget new year, I will answer that. And why is the money in our budget, Honorable September, not in DPW? Ms. Africa will answer that. With regard to the Pan-African Parliament construction, the lead department is the Department of Public Works. We are the client department. We've been working with the Department of Public Works insofar as the requirements are concerned in terms of the host country agreement that we have signed for the construction of the Pan-African Parliament. Previously, the money was given to our budget. It was taken away subsequently by National Treasury, because they have required a lot more information from the Department of Public Works.
We have not got a report back from the Department of Public Works. We will engage with them, honorable members, and we will impress upon Department of Public Works through our DG's office to also make a presentation to our committee on the status quo of the Pan-African Parliament. But just to say that the lead department, the construction department, is the Department of Public Works for the Pan-African Parliament. With regard to the value for money that we spend on the diplomatic education, there is indeed indicators that it is we are receiving value for 2 points from the programs that we provide in the diplomatic academy itself. It seems to provide quite a bit of value, so much so that other countries, especially in the African continent, have now requested for this type of training to be extended to their diplomats as well. So there is clearly evident value for money there, but DDG Modloma would be able to give us a lot more information on that one. With regard to the South African citizens themselves, honorable members will know that there are a number of outreach programs, ministerial outreach programs that have been planned for the current financial year, for the current calendar year. There were programs that were undertaken in the past financial year as well. The minister engages with the South African public on our work abroad, but we can get a lot more information from DDG Moniello on that one. I'm not sure if Ambassador Majila would like to touch on that. With regard to the budget overflows, or rather the budget spillovers, just to say from the point of operations and international transfers, there won't be any expenditure expenditure movement from the last financial year to the new financial year. The only budget flows between the two financial years is really related to capital expenditure. What happens is that on the 30th of April, or before that date, we normally write to Treasury and tell them this is the status of our finances, this is where we've underspent, and in terms of underspending on capital expenditure, as long as it's clear that the non-spending is outside our control and was unavoidable, then we engage with National Treasury to make that, because some of the projects flow over more than one financial year. Some of the construction projects that we have will not be completed in one financial year. So we normally engage with National Treasury. Of course, National Treasury has been engaging with us for a number of years to have a very clear implementation plan for our capital projects, and we have one drafted up. We are busy fine-tuning that. We engage with National Treasury and the various of the properties section within National Treasury, the PPP unit as well, on how we can take that further. But that is the only budget overflow, and we've already, on the 30th of April, written to National Treasury. It would not impact on our budget and our expenditure for the coming future. Thank you.
Thank you once more. The quotes that you were referring to were quotes at the senior management level. And as I indicated, we have now advertised all the vacant posts at that level, including the digital posts which you are about to finalize. Now, these are posts starting from director to the director general. Now, indeed, there are a number of vacancies which we have also advertised at levels below the senior management level. These include your middle management category, which would entail your assistant directors and deputy directors. Now, what has happened, for example, in January, we filled about 22 director vacancies, director post vacancies. Now, the majority of those vacancies, in fact, 90% of them were filled from within the department, which meant that we were taking from the middle management level, from your deputy directors to fill the director post. Now, what that does, it leaves a hole at the deputy director level, which we have now advertised and we're in the process of filling. Because of our career management landscape, which starts from the time that we bring cadets into the system, you find that most people grow within the organization. And as a result, when we appoint people that are already in the system and they just move up the ladder. The consequence of that is that as you fill the director post, you create a deputy director post, and you create a deputy director post, you create an assistant director post. But now we have a very broad pool from which we are able to, especially on the line function side, where we deal with our diplomats. In the area where we are able to attract people from outside is in the area of corporate services. And even here, all the key management posts have now been advertised. We are in the process of doing that.
Are you done?
Okay.
A decision was taken in the year 1999 by the then Minister of Public Service and Administration to move the portfolio to manage and acquire and develop and renovate such other properties abroad, to move that entire portfolio from the Department of Public Works to the Department of International Relations or the then Foreign Affairs. That was done based on a recommendation from the Public Service Commission. So since that day, we have received a capital budget. This capital budget we then use to acquire property, to develop new properties, and to renovate. So you are correct in saying that if we ask for a rollover of funds, it does affect the next year. And as a decision that we then have to make in the department is to say the money that we will now have for the 11-12 financial year, are you able to do in Washington both the work that you have rolled over from the previous year and the new work that you are going to do? Now, the difficulty in construction projects is that a project is a consequential project. So to try and have a project happen quicker might impact on the ultimate result that you achieve. So what we then try and do is we usually don't have enough money to acquire property. If you type that and you to acquire a new property costs you between 50 and 100 million rand per property. It means that if we have development and renovations for that entire amount, we never end up purchasing new properties. But in a situation like this, we will ask for a rollover of funds to continue with the construction that we would have done in any event. It creates a little bit of space for us to then look at our acquisition strategy and what are the possibilities of acquiring a property in that financial year. So these are the discussions that we will have with Treasury as we ask for the rollover of the budget. What do you plan on doing with your budget? What space is being created by the rollover? And what can we do with the rollover within the property portfolio? So funding for the property portfolio is never used for anything else, but we do try and move between a new development and innovation and an acquisition to try and do as much as possible. As you would have also seen from our previous budgets, budget is usually around 300 million rand and it has been reduced now every year. So in that budget it's not possible to do a huge amount of acquisition.
Thank you to the team. Oh.
Honorable Velma.
One more question. Chief. You're filling up quotas, please, in the international missions. Thank you.
Honorable September.
Okay, yeah, thank you again. Thank you for the answer. There is a grey area out of what you have explained, but I won't delve into it too much now. I just quickly wanted to say, Chair, having listened to the department explaining about the filling of vacancies, I want to suggest, Chair, because this is quite important, that we have all departments, not always going to be 100%, but really to the extent that, you know, it's really capacitated quite highly. I mean, we hear there's still adverts and it's going to, it's endless. You know, in the public service, they have this endless process of just going on and on and on until, it doesn't happen. We should maybe, Chair, not wait for another meeting to get from the department on filling of their vacancies. And I want to suggest that what the department should do is to send to the portfolio committee almost a second monthly report. Not wait for the meeting. Should write to the committee and give a second monthly report to say that out of the however many thousands of employment, employees, and they can see that this is the progress that are being made or not, because I think for us it's important. We can't wait for the annual report at the end of the year to hear people have moved sideways, upwards, or whatever, and therefore vacancies have not been filled. So I hope that the House would support that proposal. Thank you.
That's it. There's a hand in support of what you have suggested.
Chair, I would wholeheartedly support what Honourable September is saying. If you recall, the issue of capacity has long been an outstanding issue for the committee, and we've never received joy from the department. Every time the annual report comes, it comes with gaps. So I would definitely support that on a bi-monthly we receive that report, just to fast-track the process. And even the issue that Honourable Velma is raising, we've long been calling for it. Those quotas that we need to fill in this international multi-forum, what are we doing in terms of that? So we definitely need a consolidated report that encompasses that as well, that ensures what are we doing with our capacity. And in general, in making sure that we attract the quality cadres that we need to be on the system. So definitely, we are definitely in support of what Honourable September is proposing.
DDG Moodley, I am not sure whether you are in a position to respond to the quotas one, or I should hand it over to DDG Matila, who joined us. DDG, welcome. We got an apology that you were still busy, and we appreciated the fact that you were here to see the National Assembly and also to see the National Council of Provinces. So we believe that's value for money. You came for both houses on one day. I think that is per the recommendation of the CFO. Okay. DDG Matila, I'm told, is also the acting DG. Am I correct? Okay. So these difficult questions that DDG Moodley and the team cannot handle, then the acting DG will deal with that. One, there's a question from Honorable Kosana. He will handle that one, and maybe he will also help us on the quotas that we are not adequately using or utilizing, having paid so much money as subscription in all these institutions. Over to you, acting DG.
Honourable Chair, thanks very much, and I thank the all members for accepting our apology for the delay meeting when I was still with the NCOP. I must also indicate that I'm still based in Geneva. I'm talking about the United Nations in Geneva, so if I'm not answered you adequately, because I still spend 2 weeks in Geneva, 2 weeks in South Africa too, so I may not be very conversant. But let me first, on the question of properties abroad. Honourable members, I think as a country, we really need to review this question. We have 124 properties abroad. We own a few of them. And I think we're going to be expanding our footprints more and more in the continent. Maybe, or perhaps, time has arisen for us to deliberate as a country, take a decision that at least in the continent, we ought to acquire chanceries and official residences. Now, the second part of that is the maintenance of properties abroad. You know, we ask the question, are we contributing towards job creation in South Africa, directly or not? Now, I've seen many countries have what is called mobile property maintenance teams. Because the question of security, also, question of intelligence when you do a property. NCOP said to me, the Chinese came here, they built everything. They built a chancery in Pretoria, they built a chancery here. They brought all the material from China. I recall when I was DDG, before I left for Geneva last year, I have to okay something like 70 Chinese experts. You know, they bring them at, there is a team for foundation, they go. Team for what? They go. Team for roofing? They go. Then you go team for wiring. So you have waves and waves of that. But it's for security reasons. Yeah. America did the same thing. Everybody does the same thing. Why don't we do the same? Etc. So maybe there's something that we really need to do. All right, I think it is a very important question. All right, I have to indicate, maybe it's because I'm based in Geneva. There is high expectation on this country to play a major role globally. I don't think we have appreciated the impact and the success of World Cup on the minds of people worldwide. We only talk about numbers of tourism, numbers, but we have not really appreciated the impression people got from South Africa. The second thing, I don't think we understand appreciation of how this country is managed abroad, how this country is run abroad, the deepening of democracy in this country, management of national assets in this country, where we deal with poverty and development. I don't think we have a clear appreciation of how the world looks at us and to share with us. So the combination of all these things is a big expectation. That's why there was no doubt whatsoever in Mexico, since South Africa was going to host COP 17. Copenhagen could not deliver on COP 17. Cancun could not deliver on COP 17. We are expected to deliver in South Africa. Why? Because of expectation. This is really the fourth UN conference we host. All of them been very successful. Very difficult, but South Africa managed to pull through these conferences. Next year, Kyoto Protocol comes to an end. We are expected to produce a miracle on the post-Kyoto in terms of climate change. Now, Ban Ki-moon, Honorable Kosan, and his colleagues would like to see this country to play more so than they are most members of the BRICS. Now, you see, those BRICS countries are at the heart of reforming global political economic system of the world. We are part of those countries that are really making a huge transformation into how the world power is going to be distributed. So, consequently, therefore, that comes with a huge expectation. I don't know, if you look into the MENA region, Middle East and North Africa, people say, why don't you learn from South Africa? How a new country could create structures for political participation, democratization of the country. We don't have a situation where our leaders' children will inherit. You don't have President Mandela's children could be next president, something like that. But in that region, it's happening. It's happening in that region. Why don't we lean in South Africa? Is there political structure in Libya? Nothing. Egypt? Nothing. So we're expected to play a role. And we must look at the Somalia and Somalia problem and its potential impact on maritime trade to which we belong. They see we are reluctant as South Africa to contribute resources towards the Somali question, both land and sea. And they think because our people are not with us, we still think to our people that there is a need for South Africa to deploy our forces, our naval forces to patrol the sea. That xenophobic tendencies that we had in South Africa have shaken the world a bit. It is understood by Ban Ki-moon and his colleagues that we have not carried our people with us in terms of foreigners and how it relates to the question of the foreigners. But all in all, it's because we have a very good story to tell, and therefore we are expected to participate, Honorable Scotland and colleagues and honorable members, on how to deal with Africa and the globe broadly. On the quotas,
mm-hmm.
You know, honorable members asked about why we are not filling the quotas. I was shocked in March last year when I asked High Commissioner for Human Rights, our own Nabi Pele, to say, because you are there, can I see in the UN system, where are South Africans? we are oversubscribed. I was shocked that we have more South African education system than we thought. They said, no, it can't be. Because normally, we're supposed to propose candidates to see what to fill this and that. No, we're oversubscribed in the Secretary of the UN. Most South Africans who left the country in 1994 went abroad. They saw vacancies. You know, we had a lot of good people who left for different reasons after 94 elections.
Mm.
They left. But they left having passports, although they get German or British or Dutch.
Mm.
When they saw South African vacancies, they applied South Africans. There's a lot of them. If you go to Vienna, Vienna is run by South Africans. You go to WIPO, World Intellectual Property Organization in Geneva, is South African. So they applied. The second stream is those South Africans through marriage or convenience. They come here, they meet my sister, marry my sister. After some time, they get the South African ID, go abroad, apply South African, and get the post.
Hmm.
So when we come with our own list, it says, no, 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 but you know, guys,
Quotas
are oversubscribed. That's part of the problem. However, there is UN system in Africa. Our people, for instance, AU is supposed to be the biggest component of AU Secretariat. Botswana is supposed to dominate Botswana. It's supposed to have over 40% of Botswana. SADC.
Yes.
Mm. Is a question of which I'm glad cabinet now have resolved. The question of condition of service. The salaries are too low than what people get in South Africa. So as the DIRCO, we need to talk with the treasurer to at least complement whatever SADC will pay or AU will pay, we have to. So that at least they earn what our diplomats get. The thing is that if you go to Ethiopia for a post there, they will pay you the UN rate, the AU rate, and then we'll top up. So they will leave our 7 diplomas. So there is no material loss whatsoever. That's why you don't have anybody from Botswana, Swaziland, Lesotho, South Africa, Namibia in the AU. Because salary in this part of the world are very high. What Africans are there? Because the salary in the AU is so much for West Africa. So it's a question of the salary is down to the top of Sahara. But I think the cabinet approval last year, on our chair, we should be in position to fill those posts.
Thank you. On that note, let's step over to the item that we're waiting for the ambassador to lead us on, which is on Millennium Development Goals.
Members, I've got this plain presentation. The thick document is for your consumption at home, in your constituencies, in the National Assembly, wherever you need to make reference. Then you check with the thick one. For now, we'll be working on this very slim one. Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't want to interrupt the acting DG when he speaks during his presentation, but can I ask you to excuse it for half past 12?
Okay.
I've got to see an ophthalmologist.
All right. I promise that by half past 12 we'll be almost done. I know the DG can deliver on that one, especially now that he's still acting.
Chair, thanks very much. Honourable members, I think what you got from the social development is a real South African report.
Yeah.
That is a real South African report, because Zirko, we can only share with you what is happening globally, but that's a South African report. Now, I have a three-page slide, really, that talks more or less on where we are in terms of MDGs, which we have to meet by 2012. These MDGs have been grouped into four categories, namely elimination of extreme poverty and hunger, MDG 1. Those led to empowerment of women and gender equality, MDGs 2, 3, 4, and 5. And those which are health-related, MDG 4, 5, and 6. And the last one, to do with the international environment. Now energy goal, it binds all the above goals in that it creates the requisite international environment or framework within which the above goals must be achieved. The United States General has created an MDG project in his team, and he brought in a very distinguished Professor Jeffrey Sachs, which I think most of you know, to manage this program. Now, one of you remember, there was a review in 2005 and 2010. There was a high-level panel meeting last year in New York. Now, even with the facilities provided at that summit, they did not paint a very good picture, especially in sub-Saharan Africa. It says that 15 million people of children who die in Africa before their fifth birthday from essentially curable diseases, including 169 million standard children in the developing world, half of whom are Africans. Now, the early childhood development impact on this, much so as the question of HIV/AIDS and child mortality. In summary, even though much progress has been made in some areas, it has been negatively affected by lack of gains or even negative trajectories in other areas, offsetting the progress which is being registered in critical areas. And the most pertinent in this regard is the increase in the number of people living in conditions of extreme poverty and hunger, the increase in global poverty, homelessness, etc., etc. And the question of food, community prices has an impact here, food prices. I'm sure honorable members are aware that in the last 10 years, last 5 years, food prices increased almost by 80%, and this really has impacted negatively on a number of communities. Essential principle towards the achievement of MDGs involves significant increase in social spending, provision of schools and training of teachers, regional private skills to ensure community and productive labor force, building of hospitals with competent medical personnel, building of food security, achievement of infrastructure development, telecommunication, modern transport. The formula of social spending is not preferred by international financial systems, the way we spend some of this money. Now, the donors, for their part, are emphasizing issues of governance, rule of law, anti-corruption measures, democracy, accountability, transparency, and free elections, as some of the fundamental ingredients of the national level. That's the focation of collective investment environment into HIV/AIDS. In other words, most of the developing countries, and especially in Africa, they see this as conditionalities for aid. Now, there is a new criteria that they are adding the donors. It is called sexual orientation. So in every aspect, they want to see how you treat the LGBTs, lesbian, gays, heterosexuals, etc. Is a new criteria added to those listed above. The biggest challenge facing our continent is the absence of electronic statistical database for MDGs. It's very, very difficult for our members to have a very clear appreciation of what is happening in the continent. Now, as I say, our situation in South Africa is what we might have, members of parliament have received from social development. However, we did give a report to the UN in September last year, where we had a South Africa will by and large comply with MDG commitment. Even we believe at this stage, even HIV/AIDS. We are not certain at the beginning of the year, but the more we get the information, it seems even by 2015, we shall have done with the question of HIV/AIDS. Of course, the other concern that has been raised was literacy rates in South Africa. I think now we have more people in schools, but also literacy of those who actually in the past. And the Gini coefficient, it seems the gap between the rich and the poor in South Africa is increasing. So that might be some of the worry that we have. Question of food security, although social programs, grants and others are dealing able to deal with that question. And also, of course, we are having programs like anti-poverty programs. And I don't remember to recall what is happening in the presidency there. Now, the report, criminal statistical is approved, but what we really asked the official government to do is to produce a narrative format, which I think one of the methods you have, to make it meaningful. Because when you do in New York, we said, but this report, how will the ordinary people in the villages interact with this report? So that the narrative must be in simple
local language so that people can really understand what has to do with the MDGs. And the coordination here is very important around the cluster when it deals with the question of the MDGs. There is a review, all members, of MDGs in Tokyo. I think the Minister of our Minister is going to go there. There is a conference being called in Japan to come and review of the MDGs, how far we have gone, with a view to see what we need, what are the intervention measures that we need to do. But as one was saying, the South African ADICO role on MDG is to assist in the surveying of global response and how countries are dealing with MDG. Two, in Africa, where they are, what help is in the need, and in the South in general, and third, to further report. But by and large, it is the social development that chair this cluster that have to regularly give some form of support to the government. But what is very significant from our part is as the members were asking, the transformation of ERF to SAPTA, which we believe can be a very important instrument to assist our neighbors in dealing with the MDGs commitment. And it is also hoped that we can use the framework of the strategic indicative plan of the organ, which we'll be chairing from this year of SADC, in trying to see where we need to do a bit of work in the area of media development goals. But what everybody has been saying, oral members, is we hope that our country can meet the minimum goals set up in this program, and therefore contribute towards confidence in the UN system. And lastly, that it is hoped that the MDGs can become part and parcel of government planning even beyond 2015. Honourable members, you know how they were conceived. It was a debate that took place in New York, but from concrete base in the WSSD in Johannesburg, where Kofi Annan was at labor to explain to the delegation the need to have these goals after 2000 meeting in New York. It was in Johannesburg where they took a very concrete form to achieve. So we have, as South Africa, some form of an obligation to make sure that these noble goals are achieved as a minimum base for building happier societies in the future. So I thought, Honorable Chair, I would just say those few things and maybe deal with the question of answer question.
Thank you. That's the story of building safer, better communities, which we have done, Honorable Mukhalapa. Okay, members, we now open for clarities or further engagements in as far as the presentation is concerned. I have noted Honorable Loretta Jacobas, Honorable September, Honorable Skosana, is your hand up?
Yeah.
Okay, Honorable Skosana, Velma, and Mukhalapa, in that order. You are the first.
Thank you, Chairperson. I know the Acting DG's presentation was very brief, but I guess some more information will be found in this document. I've not read it myself, so I must just admit, so if I'm out of order in terms of posing the question, please tell me. I must just read the document, I'll read that. The issue of the realization of the MDGs, not just in South Africa, but I'm talking continental now. I think there should be an emphasis placed on the whole issue of conflict and how that impacts on the realization of the MDGs. Because if you look at the issue of hunger and poverty and all the communicable diseases like HIV and AIDS and TB and all of that, there's a fight going on over resources, basically. Whether it's self-imposed as a country or whether it's imposed on us from outside.
there's that conflict over resources, the resources that we own as a continent. And I think we should actually highlight that as well, because I think unless we address that issue of conflict and how that impacts, I don't think we'll start to make a dent in terms of realizing some of the MDGs, both here and abroad. So I think that must be lifted up as well, and given more prominence than what it is. Because I realized here on the second last page of the DG's, acting DG's presentation, that last bullet, where it talks about the SADC framework, especially the strategic indicative plan for the organ, SIPO, and politics and so on, and its protocol. I think we really need to put a bit of emphasis on the whole issue of security and conflict in the continent, the region and the continent.
Thank you, Honorable September.
Thank you again, Chair, and thank you very much for the report. Chair, just very quickly, the MDGs is one of those very profound decisions that the United Nations took in saying that we need to do something about the imbalances on this globe and to end poverty, hunger, and so on. This report obviously was probably dealt with in September last year at the United Nations, and it showed a picture of where the countries have been able to achieve these goals or not. South Africa took its own decision, at least to say how they're going to deal with it, and that is to have our own we created our own target, which helped us. Now there's a portion where we stopped in South Africa to do our own targets, and well, obviously you've got to read through this report, and it's difficult to do so now. That's the part that I'm quite interested in. Is it only HIV and AIDS that we have not been able to reach the target? But the second one, Chair, is it's quite clear that a number of countries have not and are not able to reach this target. And a lot of it has got to do with, yes, of course, their capacity, but also, secondly, their own infrastructure. Now, we have infrastructural problems, but our neighbors and many other on the continent far more. To what extent is South Africa, what is South Africa's role in making sure that the MDGs are achieved elsewhere? We can't be glorified about the fact that we only have been able to do certain things to do this. We do have our economy has a problem with the fact that they are not able to achieve these goals. So I'd like to know that. But the third one also, Chair, is this call was made to say that we must halve poverty by 2015. What are the discussions about the other half? Because the truth is, we didn't say 100%, we said 50%. What about the other half? And the other half is staring in our face, glaringly, all of us. So I'd really like to know, moving forward, what discussions and debates are being given to the United Nations in how we're dealing with that thing. We couldn't reach any consensus at the WTO. How are we going to reach consensus in the other half of poverty, because a lot of the other half of poverty is the inability at the WTO to reach consensus, and that's why we are having a widening gap more and more in this world. So I'm really interested to know the politics of the other half and not the philosophy of the other half, because thick documents is not what's going to give food on the table and it's going to give people houses and water. It is the real thing that is going to make that happen. If we are unable to rise to all of it today, then probably we should chair as a committee ourselves have a view on what are we doing about the other half, because that other half for me is more, is also important. If we were not able to reach this half, what about the other one? For South Africa, what stays in our face is our Gini coefficient has now dropped to the lowest. We now really embarrassingly looking at you know, the country that's now standing out for wrong things after all the good things of the World Cup and so on. So I'm really interested, and I'd really love it if the department take us into their confidence also on how we're taking this debate forward, Chair, and probably allow us to have a debate, not a debate, to make some input into this also. So, Chair, I don't know how we're going to deal with this thing, because the different goals that are there, I was very interested to find out, just specifically for South Africa, around anyone. I mean, there was a section of women, there was water sanitation, there was health, there was all of these other ones. To what extent? Because so that we can also learn what the challenges are, having achieved or not in these different goals. Because certainly under the section of women, I don't think it's very rosy there that we have been able to achieve all of that. I'm sorry if it's too long, Chair, but thank you.
Thank you. Members and Acting DG, I have a request to make. Honorable Jacobus will be excused by 12:30, and we have some business to dispose of before she leaves. Otherwise, we will be in trouble with the Office of the Speaker. Yes. So if you allow me to do so, let's deal with that
first, which will take us before taking you, Honorable Kosana. Let's deal with these recommendations for purposes of tabling before we debate the budget vote, as we had agreed earlier on, and thereafter then we can go back to our discussions on Millennium Development Goals. I'm making this request because if we allow her to leave, then we won't be able to make it. Is that in order, members? It is. And you have the document. We have discussed it earlier on. We have about how many? 1, 2, 3, 4. Seven recommendations. Is there anyone who has a problem with any of those recommendations? Yes, please. 2 minutes.
Your 2 minutes is
over. Can I get a proposer and a seconder?
Sorry, Madam Chair, on point number 6.
Okay.
Second line.
Mm-hmm.
They must be. They must be.
Okay, there, yes.
Point number 6, second line.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Jacobus.
Thank you, Chairperson. Recommendation 5.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the last sentence. Yeah, which is a very long sentence.
Mm.
You must refrain from doing such long sentences.
Okay.
Also, but there was a recommendation earlier on. It says here, progress report within 2 months of the adoption of this report relating to the vacancy rate. But I think we said it must be every 2 months as well, not just 2 months from now and then that's the end of it.
Okay.
So if you can just amend that recommendation. okay, according to what we've adopted earlier on. We're not saying they must come here physically. They can send a written report, and which we will then scrutinize.
That's number...
If it's kept, recommendation five, the last page, page two, on top there.
Okay, thank you. Honorable September.
Thank you, Honorable Jacobus, for reminding about that point. But, Chair, I'm not so sure why we should give the department 2 months for everything. Now things are old. And we really don't need 2 months for them to come back on these things. We should... this is going to be sent to the department, and then the department must come back to us in a shorter period. And regularly, time is all of these other things. Not 2 months, it's not so long. The year is finished in 2 months' time. That's the first one. The second one is, can I just ask clarification point four and I think it's six? What is the difference that the two points are saying? Because they both deal with public diplomacy.
Point? Which one is
four it? And six.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, four and six.
The other is economic diplomacy.
Yeah,
the other is public. Unless you want us to... Okay. On four, is about capacity building on economic diplomacy.
Mm.
And on six, is about a clear strategy on public diplomacy. Are you addressed, Honorable September?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Proposer?
Chair, can I just say, on the point I made earlier on, we have agreed earlier on that we want that, even if it's a one-pager every 2 months, and if we're changing, it's fine, but I'm just saying it must be in line with the resolution we took earlier on.
Yes.
If not, then we must change and say 1 month.
No, we have...
We have agreed on 2 months.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry if I caused confusion in what I'm saying. It was not that point, Honorable Jacobus, that I was referring to.
Oh.
That one is agreed with what you are saying. It's just that all the other ones are all just saying 2 months, and that's not necessarily. That one will say, must say something different in line with the earlier resolution.
Okay. Can I now get a... a denum shinwam? Which one? Okay, I think I have been to so many rallies in the previous week or so, so my voice didn't let me down there. It cannot do that now.
Yes. Okay? I'm now looking for a hand to propose the adoption of the report. Honorable Skosana.
I think, Madam Chair, we agree with the spirit of the recommendation.
The spirit of the recommendation. And also that last sentence that the committee recommends, all these recommendations run up to seven. In addition to that, that the committee, I mean the budget vote number five of international relations and cooperation be approved. Seconder, Honorable September, thank you very much, Honorable Jacobus. With amendments. Yes, with these amendments that we have just dealt with now. Then we come back to you, Honorable Skosana, on Millennium Development Goals. Thank you for your cooperation.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Acting DG, I was just looking at the last bullet there on the last page, and I thought that if I was the Secretary General of the UN, I would be worried about that scenario you're painting there. Now, I was simply thinking that with the post-election conflicts in the continent and also the violation of human rights in other countries, including the slow pace of economic integration and development in the continent, is that bullet not highly probable, that scenario? We might find ourselves not really finalizing this these goals. I mean, all of us in the continent. That scenario that you're painting about the UN's credibility, will it not happen?
Is there any other input, Honorable Velma?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you for the presentation from the Acting DG. It's very quick for me to really grasp everything, but I do have a few questions. We know that in South Africa, our country, we've been working really to eradicate poverty. And, for example, that we do increase the age of children that do get grants up to the age of 18. That was one example that we have, what we've done. And then all kinds of grants, the disability grants, foster care, have been increased, and we know what South Africa is doing. My question is, what are the other countries doing? So there are only a few. There's only South Africa that's one of the few countries that is funding NGOs for example, people with disabilities, their organizations for getting subsidies. We are one of the few countries in Africa doing this. Are there other countries, will they be able to reach those Millennium Development Goals? And then you also said that this department, DIRCO, has been assisting with global responses. And if people do not have disability grants and social grants, how are we going to assist them in order to eradicate poverty? How are they going to do it if they do not have those grants? And then we've been discussing the customs and the trade and the amount that we do get. And then especially for those small countries, that's their only income. It's from customs and from trade and industry. So it's not much. So how will they then assist to eradicate poverty with that only income that they do get? And then the MPRM, where does the Millennium Goals fit into that in the MPRM? So other countries do come and really do criticize our country. So the APRM, how does it fit in to all of this? And all these conflicts, and how do they look at us? And how do those two mechanisms do or fit into each other? Thank you.
Honorable Mukhalapa.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think when we look at the MDG, these are not philosophical or intellectual attributes. These are practical, implementable things. And Acting DG, you have referred to the issue of the expectations from the world, and in Africa in particular. And much as we might have done and achieved a little in some of these goals, but goal number one still remains our challenge. I think in the process of producing this report, we have become the most unequal society in the world. Now, that translates to poverty and hunger. So how are we going to make sure, in terms of these expectations from the global world, that we live up to the expectation in terms of making these goals achievable? And the problem with these goals is that they are not enforceable. And in light with what my colleagues have said, Honorable Velner has spoke about it, you know, conflict and all those things in the continent. How achievable are these goals in the long run? And just to add on what Honorable Skosana said in the nutshell, are we going towards that scenario that you've just ended with? Because for me, it's about making these things implementable and practical and achievable. Otherwise, it becomes an academic exercise rather than a real tangible work that can bring difference in the world. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Everybody seems to have had
an opportunity to say what they wanted to say, and the acting DG is now ready to take answers or to provide you with answers.
Over to you. Well, we at least we can go up to 12:45.
Okay, I have 3 minutes, so I will tie in 3 minutes. Honourable Member, thanks very much for the question. I will not be able to cover all of them. Safe to say that it's very true that the conflicts have an impact on the possibility to realize MDGs across the continent, especially coming at the back of the financial and economic crisis of 2008-2009. So you have a conjunction of so many negative developments that somehow indirectly will impact on the capacities and possibilities of a country to achieve the MDGs. We are very optimistic towards 2010 in 2007-2008, but when we had that financial crunch, we knew that we in Africa, especially South Africa, would be negatively impacted. We have seen countries reducing investment and ODA. Conflicts, if you just look at Egypt, they had 1 million migrant workers in Libya. Egypt, 1 million, who among themselves were remitting billions of dollars back home. They are all back in Egypt. The social services in Egypt have come to a stop. So the dreams of Egyptians towards 2015 have been negatively impacted. And the same thing with Chad and those countries in the south of Libya. Libya was run by migrants. If you look into the Middle East, in MENA region, you had something like, take Qatar. Qatar is a country of about 625 people, but Qataris are 262,000. Half a million were Bangladeshis, Pakistanis, and Indians that went back home. Saudi Arabia, you have something like 2 million Filipinos, half a million, 1.5 million have gone back home. So just the outflow of migrants from the MENA region is going to have a big impact on the other countries' possibilities of MDGs. In the AU, four countries are contributing 75% of the AU budget: South Africa, Nigeria, Egypt, Libya, and Tunisia. Tunisia is gone, Libya is gone, Egypt is wobbling. So we have to take the responsibility, therefore, for contributing towards that. So it is true, well, I remember that you ought to have highlighted the impact of the impact of the air. And then we should not forget also that influencers, N1H1 and others, because when they came, those pandemics, there was an inward looking in the north, and in the process, we forgot to develop necessary vaccines and others to deal with the question of health. So this combination of very negative influences, in addition to this, is this floods and erratic weather patterns, which is related with millions of people moving across boundaries. And when people move from place to place because of drought, because of floods, you dislocate them from production. And we do hope that in the next 3 or 4 years, somehow we can recover the lost ground. So that's the first question. The second one is the I'm not going to be picking and choosing, but I'm just worried. Some of us are very confident that this country will meet its targets. Honorable Mokgalapa was saying these are just minimum goals. What Kofi Annan was trying to do, honorable, let's remember how we came to MDGs in 2000. We are all worried about marginalization, exclusion of developing countries. We are all worried by that. NIPAD was giving some hope of what we can do. So what Kofi Annan was doing was saying, okay, let's just focus on a few things that can improve the lives of ordinary people. Ordinary people. Let's forget about many things. Let's look at health, question of poverty, women, you know, just focus on some few things. As government, please internalize this in your planning system. You know, what's supposed to have happened is that all governments are supposed to have modeled their planning processes, among other things, based on the MDG schools. That's part of government delivery plan. We are so pleased in DIRCO when we review at international meetings, especially at the UN, that if you take all the MDGs, you can see them in the national planning in South Africa. In every planning process that we have done since 2000, at the heart of that is, without saying it's MDGs, but you can see those goals in our national plan. And that is why there was a deliberate, I think, decision to try to address those goals by, as part of national. So what is supposed to be happening post-2015 is that these minimum goals should remain part and parcel of government planning. What does UN does? UN is a conscience of international community. UN remind the world on what's supposed to do for their own people. Because UN have no resources to do MDGs. We as member of parliament, we as people representing constituencies are supposed to make sure that these goals are embedded in the planning process of our own government, at different layers of national, provincial, and local government, that these goals are rooted there because they are meant for ordinary people. They cannot depend on being driven by New York. They must be driven locally by our people. In fact, members of parliament, when they go to their constituencies, they must take to task the districts and provinces. What have you done about this? Because indeed, they address the question of within other questions. Now, the last one, because of time, and I took already 2 minutes, is the issue of I think it was raised by Honorable September, the question of the other 50%. Again, what Kofi Annan was doing as an African, he was, because I just want to put it, it's just a minimum. It's just minimum. We have 80% poverty. If you can just deal with 50%, with the hope that you can all learn in 10 years, from 2010 to 2010,
mm-hmm.
2015, 15 years, you can learn that these things are doable. If you have this thing internalized in your own planning system, after 15 years, you can have what is called lesson learned. It is possible that governments don't have to wait for the UN, that we can do them. So it is hoped that all members will make sure that parliaments continue to address these questions. And the last question is, honorable member, chair, we are excited as the DICO, or what is called parliamentary diplomats. Parliamentary diplomats. We're sitting with honorable speaker in Geneva last year and this year, on parliamentary diplomacy and DICO. Now, what do we do in Africa? The parliament votes for us particular quantum of funds. What we can then do with those funds is to do at least to help to create conditions. We can give grants. You know, I think it's only about two countries that give grants. It's us and Botswana, I think, in the continent. We started about 4 years ago to give social grants. But when we discussed at ILO, when I happened to be the chair of the ILO governing board, now, what we discussed at ILO was what is called social floor. That is not the quantum of money you give. Really, even if you have 100 shillings, it is the policy beyond the grant. It's not the grant per se. If states know that I can give 100 shillings, which is about 10 rand, to a farmer in Tanzania, it is that policy intervention that then says to the government, if you do little things to the people, you can be able to relieve their plight. So we are helping the ILO, honorable members. But as we are asked by ILO to assist Egypt, and I think they want us to assist Tunisia, in the social floor.
What is it that we have done in the grant system in South Africa? How were they mobilized, the grant system? And how were they managed, this grant system? What sparks things is, remember, in Tunisia and Egypt, is the level of poverty. It's amazing how poor people are in Egypt. So we are interacting with them to try to assist them to do that question. But I think DICO has a big challenge. Honorable Chair, you know there is a review of SACU. Now, if you can follow through the proposed change SACU revenue formula, Swaziland is going to sink, Lesotho is going to sink, Botswana is going to, and Namibia. But Swaziland will close tomorrow. Lesotho will be in free state tomorrow. Because if you imagine that 6% of the budget of Swaziland comes from SACU revenue, additional to what they are entitled to. Because normally what you do, you say, okay, we project that you will get 4 billion, 5 billion. So we give them advance. Now at the end of the year, we have to make a decision, bring back. You only deserve 2 billion. And you're only giving them 4 billion. Which means close everything in Lesotho. In Swaziland. Now, the external trade that Honorable Vilma talked about, the external trade, and there's has an impact on this. We want to then go towards the SADC Custom Union. It's going to be the same thing. So, would you want, with a question, Ban Ki-moon again, South Africa. You really want us to implement the revised SACU revenue sharing or not? Part of SAPTA is going to take this extra revenue we give to Swaziland, Lesotho, Botswana, Namibia into a bigger pool for cooperation with the rest of the world. But the effect of that is that Swaziland is going to be dysfunctional. It will be dysfunctional. Botswana will go to a huge budget deficit. Namibia is going to go to a huge budget deficit. They're going to have instability. You see, for the first time in Botswana, there are 3 weeks strikes. They never had it.
Mm-hmm.
So you are going to have, I don't know what's going to happen in Zimbabwe, but I think if you look at this, I would like to really leave you this, if you look at it, either we convert that extra SACU revenue into a grant and therefore put certain things like good governance, you have to go good governance, you have to manage your system better, social grants, etc. I think we should do something towards that because if not, we are going to have restive neighbors in what you call, added to what is happening in the rest of the continent. But at the same time, we are optimistic that we'll have global economic recovery with the fundamentals, except the worrisome of the Mediterranean region in Europe, the debt question, because all of them are in debt. But we see a possibility of some stability in terms of economic growth, and we hope that this will translate into some form of certainty in terms of transfer to Sub-Saharan Africa, which most of them depend on budget support by the North. From Tanzania, 51% of Tanzanian budget is ODA. Mozambique, I think, is almost the same percentage. Lesotho, over 70%. Swaziland. So we hope that as the finance of Europe stabilizes, there will be certainty in terms of transfer. So we can at least arrest, even if you don't meet the Millennium Development Goals, we can arrest the retrogression in terms of dealing with the challenges of poverty, the development and unemployment. Thanks, Honorable Chair. I apologize to Honorable members not answering all of them, but maybe we can find a way of dealing with that. Thanks.
Honorable September? Okay. Honorable members, thank you very much for your patience. And to Acting DG and your team, we also thank you very much for being here and giving us this information which we have been looking for so long. And I think the Acting DG did very well. I know he can go a long way. So with the limitations of time, he did excellently well. And I think the statement that made him to confine himself with the time is that he is still acting. Yeah. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Okay. No, what about? No. You want to prove it? Done. Yes.